So we'll start everything in infinite dimensions.
That will lead to the usual divergence formula that we already know. And of course, it will change this function in some way.
So the divergence will be set to E plus W over HR, B, and X. B has two terms. So there's a term from the usual divergence in this constant model form that will give us some. Plus
the second term.
We'll have it after this function here.
Okay. So is this. Everybody happy with this?
Yeah.
This is happening by change.
I find it has a preservation that even changes as many final planning by this factor. So
what we'd like to say is that the observables,
the measurements we make on those
are probably a little bit smaller.
But I just want to rescale those a little bit
because of this model of HR, so I'm going to move this model of HR over here by multiplying it over HR.
Space
will be one dimensional, and that will tell us the rules of the equation by parts will reduce any polynomial interval to the interval of 1.
And that will happen if
nobody goes against you.
So, at least often, the rules of the equation by parts will be different
in other situations.
So, as long as we're still doing this cubic,
then maybe this quotient is not one dimensional, and there's several different independent.
How would you rate an HR at this point? Is that what
you're working? Working? So soon. So the things that survive are exactly terminals. Functions. Of regions. So what we've been describing is like everybody knows that that saddle-point approximation of finite dimensional intervals tells you you should look at that H-bar, but specifically you should look at the critical points. This is a way to see this main equation by parts. And another thing is probably of this. It's a kind of general argument that tells you that if the critical loads of W is a bunch of points, that only one dies, the space of quantum observance doesn't result the same dimension. So this tells us that in this situation, if a bunch of isolated points and not the observable points, that the number of independent intervals is the number of critical ones. So, an iteration by parts will reduce you to a situation, to an n dimensional space, but there's n possible cycles in the integral order. You might be familiar with this from the Picard-Lagesse theory.
I'm sorry.
The Picard-Lagesse theory. How you analyze. Well, what you do is you have this integral law. You write this integral over CN and the contour, and then you try to think of what possible contours are there for the integral converges, or identify two contours that only be formed there are n. There's n critical points. There are like things flowing at the steepest descent away from the triangle. Okay, so what the PD formalism does for you is the next step would be to say, rather than just looking at, rather than just getting rid of the image of divergence, we'd like to do this in a more homological way. So, what you can do is model all the analogs. Suppose we start with the ordinary measure. Just a volume model. And of x, we can identify functions on the ordinary. These are the same thing as top form of Rn. By sending a function to f x1, xn. That has volume.
And
once you do this identification, you know pretty quickly that the image of divergence is exactly the same as the image of the round object. So, back in the field, on our end, identify n minus 4 quarks. And send the vector field fi, the xi, to the n minus 4 form, so fi s minus 1 is 1 pi.
So I've just removed
the half piece. This is contracting volume form. This
so
you can easily convince yourself
that this diagram reads. So what we find is there's an isomorphism between sections of the K exterior power of the tangent bundle. So these are covariant tensors. Thank you.
we want it so that this diagram kids.
Thank you.
So I put this point in my mouth. Isn't he happy now?
He alternatively take the isomorphisms physics to be different.
You can, yeah, that's an excellent point. You can take the isomorphisms to be different. Or equivalently, you could say that this complex, the Twister parameter complex, is isomorphic to the usual parameter complex. But the isomorphism involves hitting both my IE minus W over HR. But you don't want to do that because you want to be careful about, you know, these complexes really have different cohomology. If I have a reasonable function here, something polynomial growth at infinity, and I multiply I minus W over H bar, it's going to be completely crazy. So you really mess up the growth conditions at infinity. So it's better to change the differential. What the best way to do it is have a different differential, but always have the same class of functions.
So it's really considering not the full Dirac complex, but some subcomplex thereof.
Yes. There's all kinds of subtleties here, yes. So you want.
Maybe
algebraic homomorphic, yeah. Maybe in some way. Alright, actually another way to think about the subtleties is. So if H bar was a number, that would be the way to do it. We want to consider algebraic or maybe Schwartz or something like that, temporal distributions, this kind of thing. But if H bar was a Fourier series, you would also say, well, the elements here should have coefficients of one series. This is very far from a one series. So it messes you up in a different way.
But if you have this kind of twisted differential, is it possible that you go out of the range that you prescribe as your function space?
You don't, because you assume that W is polynomial. So if W wedge keeps you in the class of polynomials or anything. So, in terms of the cohomology, what you would expect to happen, like, if H bar is formal, then you can, here, we put H bar here if you want, and we can compute the cohomology by first computing this error, this thing dominates. And you should convince yourself that the cohomology of this guy looks like it's added by the number of free components. But the cohomology of this guy is one dimensional, it looks different. Even if H bar is analytic, there is a very involved and complicated theory for computing this guy. The cohomology of this guy is supposed to produce free dimension cycles of this function. And it's something like the number of free components. And it's related also to this stuff. The known number of the single RV. Like the one part of this is supposed to be the known number of the single RV, it's very different from just one versus single. Any other questions? Okay, so let's. So now we've, you know, we've realized how to write divergence of this kind of exponential measure as a complex. Well, I didn't tell you explicitly what this term looks like, so let me write down a formula for that. Write this in the language of antigens. So what does this extra term do? So that minus beta over h bar says that k to some minus one. x.4 dot x dot 1 x dot 4.
So we take one of the vector fields here in, and we remove it and use it to differentiate W. So if you read something about the BP formula, what they will tell you is that for every field of your theory, you're supposed to produce a corresponding antifield with the opposite part. But what's going on there is that these antifields correspond to these dialysis. And the polynomials in these antifields will build up this divergence complex. So consider that the ring of polynomials in xi and theta i are odd variables. I'm going to give them a cohomological degree minus 1. So meaning they're odd variables, meaning they satisfy I, j, c, minus j, and you can do. So we want to view this ring of polynomials. Here's its functions of fields, is the axis, and antifields. Now, this string of polynomials is isomorphic to the space given by its fractions like this. There's an isomorphism. Thank you. be the orbital class candidate. So delta f I 1 e I k is going to be sum of now f I times minus 1 or 1 because I must hit him with the d by d to I, and that removes one of these guys. And if there aren't any d by d I's, I get 0. If A is, I just remove it. But at the price of a sign, because I'm moving this odd quantity past a bunch of odd quantities. And then I also hit F. So it is exactly the same formula. So the meaning of this kind of funny looking DDL Gaussian is it's just there to get rid of the divergences. So the other term is minus 1 over HR sum of W X I transforming in the opposite way in whatever symmetries we have. And then on the space of polynomials, the fields and the antifields, we can write down these operators. And the cohomology of del plus this thing is and the observables. Bigger h0 is equal to polynomials of x modulo divergences. So we'd like to port this to field theory, the interdimensional setting. And notice there's one more ingredient we need to have, which is the BV antigraph. So we notice that the x's and the theta's have opposite indexing. So it symmetric. When I switch to guys, I pick up the usual factor of the properties of F and G, times the same thing with G and F.
There's something that's always confused me. There's like a homological grading, and there's also an even odd grading. Are those the same thing here?
They're the same thing here, but because we started with fields, x is neutral bosons. So if I start with a field theory which has bosons and fermions, then there will be independent homological, and it will be z times z.
And then in that case, what's the grading of this? When you say the Poisson record is degree 1, what?
So it'll be by degree 1, 0, and z times z, 2, maybe.
Okay.
Except it never touched it for me. Oh, it's just on the model.
Okay.
Our argument is, you call the identity, or sorry, this one. Understand how to treat beam forms in finite dimensions. Let's do a few minutes discussing the BP formalism of infinite dimensions for a free sphere of field. And now we'll just mostly treat things classically. Because it's difficult to keep the quantum out. So consider a free scale field. And it could be some manifolds, and it could be all n. So this is not the beginning of passing. This is the annoying thing with this triangle terminology. You could use written symbol. So to put this in the BP formalism, introduce still a scalar, but it's an anti-commuting scalar. So, so we know that this does not satisfy spin statistics. That's okay, because we only expect an entirety half an things of ghosts for zero. So there are things like this we're calling ghosts because they are not unitary. I suppose what I want to try to write down is what observables look like, what the medial passage looks like. So observables, so for the sake of the annuals, let's be really simplistic annuals more. So the observables at some point zero or what might we say? Are given by I can take phi at zero. Are polynomial systems. So we get some polynomial thing. So of course, you know, this is position, momentum, and so on. Actually, you see something funny. It looks like momentum is not conserved. Because the proven momentum is not zero. So, but once we put things in the DB formalism, we'll find, get rid of those variables in such a way that momentum will be conserved. The way to create these standard fields. Right, so maybe if it introduces better notation, like O of N is the observable now by 0. And UA is tau star 0. Then the DB Laplacian, or the SOM DB Laplacian, bracketing the action functional looks like sum O and plus 2. There might be some factors of n, probably n one or something. So it takes the observable mu of n to its observable. So pretty clearly, she said H0 of this complex is going to be polynomials in O0 and O1. So that's position. And that's limit. And in fact, there's no higher homology in this case.
At what point in this discussion did we decide we only cared about the value of phi at 0?
Well, there's many good question. So there's many computations I could do. Here I decided I wanted to compute the observable at 0. So you could ask the same question for the observables which measure the field on any region. And because S is low on B, this differential will preserve that class observables. And that's why the cohomology would be a factorization. Okay, so in the end, I feel, I might think, why did we go to all this trouble to figure out the three-body position of a measure with quantum mechanics? But the real power of this comes when it's engaged in. So if we're just working with field theory, it really pretty much all it does, in most cases, is classically impose the equations of motion. The quantum level gets rid of divergences for the function of measure. I mean, that's actually a lot, because that's a great long way to find the path with those competitive convergences. But the real power of this story comes when we have a gauge theory. So I'll stop.
So in general, this would be like the redundancy of adding support to the what are called redundant operators?
Yeah. The difficult part is figuring out what redundant things are.